Hey there, Danny with Right Foot Down. I messed up this ad read so many times because I really want to tell you about Track Monkey Apparel. They make great quality, enthusiast shirts along with hats, stickers, watches, patches, you name it. A couple of my personal favorites are their Life is Better at the Track tee and their One Track Mind tee. You should really check them out and see for yourself. Their products are great for you or the gearhead in your life. Visit trackmonkeyapparel.com.
You're listening to the Untitled Car Show in partnership with RightFootDown.com. Visit RightFootDown for your daily automotive fix. If you enjoyed today's program, please tell a friend. It's the best way to support this show. If you want to visit the archives, go to YouTube and search for Untitled Car Show. That'll bring you to the archived episodes. If you want to follow the show, just search for Untitled Car Show on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can always send an email to the show at untitledcarshow@rightfootdown.com. We're so glad you decided to spend the next hour or so with us. Without further ado, let's get into today's program. All right, take two. Hello and welcome to the Untitled Car Show. I am your host, Ike. Today we have Robert Dunn. He hosts a fascinating program on YouTube called Aging Wheels. Robert, it's a pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. Fascinating. Interesting choice of words.
Well, I led with fascinating because you drive around a Trabant, and I can't think of a better word to describe that vehicle than fascinating.
Stupid.
Well, stupid is, it's a little too disingenuous for me, because it's an interesting vehicle. It's got all sorts of weird commie quirks to it that you know, show us through the videos. So it's kind of, it's fascinating. Then you do, like, you built your own camper shell for the back of your F-150. So I think fascinating is a good word for what you do. And, you know, for those of you out there who are listening who don't really know what we're talking about, how would you describe your channel, you know, briefly, Robert?
In my description for the channel is only four words long. I said some car, some entertainment. I'd say it's car-based entertainment, but it's really just kind of whatever I feel like doing at the time. I only do whatever I'm truly interested in the moment.
Yeah, so that means it might be the Trabant this week in an episode. It might be a camper shell.
I might be finding out the range of the Wego one week, or the Wego is an electric car if you haven't seen the channel. Or, yeah. I don't know, there's two videos where I destroy cheap cars that I got that kind of deserve to be taken off the road, and I do those in a somewhat entertaining fashion. And there's some other projects and stuff on there. It's kind of whatever.
Yeah, so I guess we should start at the beginning here. So how did you decide that you were going to make a YouTube channel in the first place?
Well, I had been watching a lot of Top Gear, and I got a lot of inspiration from that, as silly as it sounds. I wanted to do, actually, I had been watching a lot of YouTube videos as well, which I guess that's how everyone gets inspiration, is by mimicry. I wanted to start out doing car reviews, which in retrospect was kind of a silly thing to do because I didn't know anything and I still don't know anything, and I still think car reviews are impossible and somewhat pointless. But anyway, I wanted to mix it up a little bit. The very first video I did was with my roommate at the time's Mercury Grand Marquis, just a massive boat of a thing. And I thought, well, I want to do something a little different in there, some gags, some, I don't know, off humor. I didn't want to make a normal review where I'm just talking about some stupid car that no one cares about. I wanted to do something that was kind of entertaining.
There's not really ever been a boring car on the channel. It's been all sorts of, you know, you had 944, the Trabant, obviously, you know. I guess the closest thing to kind of normal and boring is the F-150. But even that's got a little bit of a story behind it, and you're building its own camper shell, which is fascinating. So Well, you built it and then you rebuilt it.
The only time I even featured the pickup on there was I was kind of bored in college when I started this, and I wanted to make a video about the pickup that was kind of not run-of-the-mill. So I set out to prove that it was a good sports car, which of course it isn't, and I found a couch on the side of the road while I was filming, so I incorporated that into the video. So that was the twist I put on that one.
And that kind of brings me to the point. You're fresh out of college. You're a younger gentleman, as they would say, and yet you host a channel called Aging Wheels. So, you know, when I first saw the channel, and I think I saw you first on Twitter, and I saw Aging Wheels, go check that out. I was kind of expecting a older gentleman, and I'm like I could be this guy's dad. So maybe not quite that, but it's a so why the, you know, love of kind of like the older vehicles?
Well, I actually like to talk about the name because I do like the older cars. They're more obtainable, first off, and I think they're more interesting. And they just have a different feel to them most of the time. Like the thing I had when I started the channel was the 944, and I just liked how not quite raw, maybe that's a bit too extreme of a description, but how connected you feel to it. It's not all good, but it's so alive feeling. Like the steering wheel will wriggle in your hand. I remember one time I was coming around a corner and there was just a little tiny patch of water in the ground. I felt the steering wheel go light, and that was just super exciting for me because it doesn't have power steering in that thing. And anyway, got way off topic there. That's kind of why I like the older cars. But the name of the channel, Aging Wheels, I picked that because I wanted it to be incredibly vague. I wanted it to be something that could mean almost anything, and everything on the planet is aging. And if I'm going to talk about cars, they probably have wheels. So it's kind of open for the future if I change my mind.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be cars. It could be motorcycles or tractors or whatever you want.
It's probably going to be cars, but it's open now.
This is the thing that really makes me jealous, is because obviously, given the title of this show, I suck at coming up with titles, and everyone's so freaking clever with their own titles. Like, oh, Aging Wheels, that makes sense. So, you know,
I was just trying to avoid like Saab Kyle 04, something like that you're stuck with.
You're stuck with that for the rest of your life. Like, so is it a channel about Saabs? Like, well, not really, but kind of in the beginning, and like. So, but why is he driving a Nissan? Like, it's a long story. So, given the clever name and the, you know, beginning with a Porsche 944, I have a question I'm sure that's on everyone's mind, really, which is, why a Trabant?
I get asked that all the time by people that have never even seen the Trabant, because I talk about it quite often, but... It was just the car that I wanted at the time. All of my car buying decisions are purely emotionally based. Obviously, they're somewhat financially based if I can afford them, but they're emotionally based. There was an article on Jalopnik around the time that I started looking for a Trabant. I don't remember who wrote it, otherwise I would give them credit here for my obsession. But anyway,
let's just blame Jason, because that's probably who it was.
it may have been Steph. It doesn't matter. Yeah. It was about Trabant's rally cars and how terrible they are as rally cars, but at the same time, they're so good at being rally cars. There were several videos in the post. Like, one was the most anticlimactic start I've ever seen in my life, where the Trabant's just revving for 30 seconds. Then he dumps the clutch and nothing happens and nearly stalls, which I've tried, and it's an accurate thing that happens. Anyway, I was looking at that article and I thought, you know, there's nothing stopping me from getting this car that would be incredibly interesting. So I started emailing some people. I even contacted Japanese Classics in Virginia to see if they did European imports of any sort. And they didn't really know what to do about it. So I contacted a website whose name I forgot, and a nice guy emailed back and said, yeah, eBay's the best place to look for these things. And at the time, I think it was about July or something that I started looking for this car. My goal was to buy a Trabant maybe at the end of the year or the beginning of next year, but then I started emailing these people, and the guy that emailed me back from the website, whose name I can't remember, he said that, oh, there's one on eBay right now, and I went to the to eBay, to the link he sent me, found it, contacted the guy, called him, said, hey, what's wrong with the Trabant? And he said, nothing, and he offered me a deal, said, I'll take down the eBay listing if you pay me this amount, and I bought it sight unseen, and I went with my dad with a trailer down to Miami, Florida to go get it.
Which is not a short haul from, you live in Missouri, given the plate.
Yeah, St. Louis area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a short haul, but Missouri's in the middle of the country. Everything's going to be a long haul.
Yeah. It's the blessing and the curse of Missouri. Well, there's other parts, but, you know.
The state of misery.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I used to live right next door in Illinois, and, you know, avoided Missouri pretty much at all costs. But it's nice. You know, it's okay. You know, it's no Iowa. Let's just be a... No.
The best I can say about it is where I live.
But it's an okay place. It's got that Midwest charm. And it kind of brings me to the other point of it, too, of, you know, Missouri not known for, let's say, you go down a street. My experience with Missouri is you go down a city street and it's pickup truck, pickup truck, pickup truck, pickup truck, Ford sedan, Toyota Camry, pickup truck, pickup truck, pickup truck, pickup truck. And here you are, you're in Missouri, and you go, I really want a Trabant because I saw some videos on Jalopnik. And you go down and you get it and you bring it up here. And I can't imagine, first of all, like, I'm just picturing your dad giving Missouri like a big, you know, corn fed good old boy. And he's like, we're going to go get a commie car? Because,
yeah.
Like what was the initial reaction of, like, you know, close friends and family?
Well, it was kind of that. I was working at a different place at the time. And told some people that I was going to go get a Trabant, and everyone thought it was hilarious to send me the link to the Time article about 50 worst cars of all time, like I didn't already know about that.
Yeah.
My dad just kind of thought, well, that's weird, but whatever. And then we went and got the car. He doesn't understand it, but he's accepting of it, I guess.
Yeah. I'm just... The way you phrase that, I'm picturing it like, Dad, Mom, I got something... I need to tell you, I want a Trabant. Like, oh, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm experimenting. Yeah, I'm experimenting, and I've dabbled in a bit of communism, and I think I like it. Like, are you using protection? Well, it's made out of cotton. Like, oh, like it's even worse. So,
yeah,
which
zero
is
zero protection.
Exactly. So, it's such a. I guess we should explain what a Trabant is if someone out there somehow doesn't know what we're talking about. It's a little, it's what, V4 dual?
Oh, no, it's a two-cylinder.
Oh, it's a two-cylinder, so.
Yes, two-cylinder, two-stroke, air-cooled, 26-horsepower engine in a cotton fiber reinforced resin body. The frame is still steel. It has a transverse leaf. I'm doing gestures that no one can see here. It has transverse leaf springs front and rear. It has the most archaic suspension and simple suspension I could possibly imagine. But it is still unibody, which is kind of interesting. But it was designed to be this family car, but it's by far the smallest car I have, even compared to a smart car.
Well,
and it was what every person in East Germany had, unless you were a state worker or a lawyer or something.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if you didn't give your people a lot of food, they didn't need a lot of space to, you know, drive around. So,
yeah. The back seats in that thing don't have seat belts, but the front seats do. I just got to wonder what they thought about the children. Do they just not care?
Yeah, they bounce around. They'll be fine. You know, what's worse that's going to happen? They're going to fly out through the cotton. Like, oh, boy. Like, it's... I mean, honestly, it's Trabant on Trabant crime, most likely, out there. So what's really going to happen? We got into a crash and we got a sweater.
Else is driving.
Yeah. So you get it you get to Florida, you get this thing. I'm assuming you get in, start it up, put it on the trailer, or do you even get to start it up while it's in Florida?
No, I didn't start it up. The guy that sold it to me was Hungarian. He imported a bunch of them. He's really enthusiastic about this car, but what really bothered me was he pulled up his Ford van and jumped it to start it because the battery was dead. It had been sitting so long. And we took the jumper cables off, and they were burning hot. And I learned later, this car has a 6-volt electrical system, and he just jumped it with a 12-volt Ford van.
Oh, God.
But he took us for a ride around the neighborhood after not ruining any of the electrics somehow. And he was really enjoying it, and it worked well. And I got it home, and it had a misfire, and it was a big ordeal to get it licensed.
Yeah, So Florida is a little bit more lenient under DMV standards than a lot of states. So, you know, I didn't even think about that. He imported it himself, so was it all kind of gray markety, or was it just Missouri being Missouri?
No, he had Florida titles. He had it on, I think, on all of the cars he imported, he titled them in Florida, so it was much easier to transfer over here. I didn't have to do any of that paperwork.
So what was the issue then?
Well, the issue was Missouri has this wonderfully stupid law that if you're transferring a car from out of state, if you're transferring a title from out of state, no matter what the car is, you have to have a safety inspection before the title transfers. Now, that's stupid because this is a Trabant. It's a car that's more than 25 years old, and I could just get historic plates and never have to get a safety inspection on it, but I have to get a safety inspection to get the title. So I had to have it pass safety inspection before I knew anything about it, and that was kind of fun. But it was easy because the mechanic was afraid of it, so he just kind of passed everything on my word. The headlights didn't work or anything like that. I just told him a lot of the things didn't exist, and he believed me.
I mean, that is the great thing about that car is you can make up whatever lie or BS you want, and it's who's going to fight you about it.
Yeah. So. I also had a problem with the VIN number, because the VIN number is only 6 digits long on it. It's not a real VIN. And because it's so short, it was a partial match on a stolen car. So I had to have it taken to the inspection station for the highway patrol so they could verify it's not a Taurus. It was a pretty easy verification there.
Yeah. Is, well, I could see the similarities, you know. Maybe
a little ugly.
Yeah. Maybe one a little bit more than the other, but I could chit-chat all day about the Trabant. Is that the car that you get, like, the most attention on the channel? Like, you know, I'm sure you're sitting there watching The Matrix. Yeah, so.
No, it's 100%, yeah.
So, I mean, because it's lovable and it's weird and, you know, everyone kind of wants to, you know, misery loves company and everyone kind of likes to watch. It's like kind of the same way, you know, my wife really enjoys the program Hoarders. And I think part of that's like at least I'm not that kind of crazy. So, you know, maybe that's what everyone's kind of getting, like a little Schadenfreude of like, well, at least I'm not that crazy of a car guy. So, you know, that takes a level of dedication and commitment to get that thing. So, you know, bravo and thank you.
The impression I get from the comments is more like it's Hungarian people, or it's usually Hungarian people that comment, sometimes in Hungarian, so I have no idea what they're saying, but they have memories with these cars, the Trabants they grew up with. And even if they hate them, they just love seeing one running around in America. I don't quite understand it. I'd like to break out of that shell a little bit, but it's really interesting to watch because people are using this car to reconnect with their own past.
I mean, a lot of car love is built in from nostalgia, so I kind of get that.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing when we had Austin of Austin's Garage on, the, you know, Yugoslavian people love the Yugo, and even though it's a piece of crap, there's some sort of weird pride in having a crappy car, but whatever. So I'm curious, then, what was the first car you learned to drive in?
I grew up on a farm. My parents weren't farmers. We just grew up on a farm area because my grandparents were farmers. So I kind of learned to drive in gaiters since I was eight.
Skid steers or normal ones?
The gravel road that was in front of our house back and forth, but my house and my grandparents' house. Kind of a natural progression from there. At some point, I started driving the pickup or the van, whatever we had at the time, between houses. And when I got my license, it wasn't as smooth of a transition as I thought because I was terrified, even though it was just a small town, Mexico, Missouri, if anyone's curious. It's just kind of it wasn't a one-step thing. It was a natural progression since I was eight.
Well, I mean, so what was the first road-legal car you owned then?
The first car I owned, I guess I technically owned it. I wasn't much part of the process. It was a 78 Jeep CJ7. Looking back, that car was great, but I was 15 and didn't really care that much about cars when I had it. And my dad taught me to drive stick in it, so I was afraid of it because he was very assertive in his teachings. What happened to that thing was, well, it was slow and really bad on the highway because its top gear was like 25 miles an hour. It was geared so low. So it was bad on the highways, which around small towns, that's all there is. And yeah. I stopped driving a little bit because my pickup came along. Because my grandpa got put in a nursing home. This is kind of a sad story, but my grandpa got put in a nursing home right after he bought this brand new F-150. So a year later, after he bought it, he couldn't drive it anymore, and it became my pickup. And so I kind of didn't drive the CJ7 anymore because you have a brand new pickup to drive.
Yeah. Like, Death Trap? Pickup truck. Pickup truck. Yeah.
Yeah. I learned that CJ7 caught on fire after we sold it.
Don't they all? Isn't that what Jeeps do, is they just kind of catch fire?
Like, yeah, that thing burned to the ground, too.
At least you weren't in it. This is a theme. True. Yeah, this is a
Someone
theme.
Someone else's from, problem.
Yeah. I don't know, like... so then, you know, Jeeps, you know, I see a little bit of off-roading, a little bit of rally, you know, love I could see in there. How did you end up getting a 944 of all things?
Price. Price was the big thing there because I had just started an internship in Kansas City and I was really bored in the dorm rooms that they had us in. And I started thinking, well, you know, well, I'm in an internship now. I'm making money. I don't have any living expenses. So I started looking at cars on Craigslist, and the 944 stood out to me early on because it was something that was obtainable, which that's probably the downfall of most 944s now that I say that.
Yeah.
But I started looking at them, and there was one just down the road from me, and I went and looked at it, and I was kind of afraid because I didn't know anything. So I had my dad drive all the way out to Kansas City, and he looked at it, and he gave me the green light, and I got that car, and I didn't drive it around Kansas City. I actually just drove it straight back to my parents' house and messed with it after the internship was over, which was kind of hard to do. But after that, it was licensed, and I started driving it around college, driving it back and forth from college to my parents' house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure it was never described as a Porsche 944. I'm sure whenever the ladies asked, it was always, What kind of car is this? Oh, it's a Porsche. Like, oh.
I tried that about three times. It never worked.
No, they don't care. They never do.
No.
Yeah.
No.
At least they're acting like they don't care. Yeah. I don't know. I'm still not convinced. I think they care. I think they're just not letting us know that they care. I don't know. I'll get to the bottom of this eventually.
You subscribe to the Grand Tour methodology, don't you?
Yes, I do. Like, no, they're hiding it. They're suppressing it. It's true.
Oh, yeah. It's all swelling within them.
Mm-hmm. So was that the first like sports car you got?
Yes, and I mentioned earlier about the Jeep that my dad taught me how to drive stick in it. And when I got the 944, I still wasn't good at driving a manual transmission car.
Yeah.
So I just convinced that I was going to teach myself because I really liked that car and I liked tinkering with it. And it was just sitting there, and I thought, well, as soon as this car gets licensed, I'm going to drive it. I'm going to drive it properly. I'm going to learn how to heel toe and all that stuff I've seen on the internet. So I did. Taught myself to heel toe in that car. much to the chagrin of the people living on the back roads around my college.
Yep.
I really enjoyed it. It was a learning experience. The whole car was.
I mean, that's kind of the ideal thing for, you know, that age in my mind, is an older car that's, you know, they're not terribly easy to work on than old Porsches. Did you have the, you know, what was it, the CIS system, that weird mechanical fuel injection system in it? I'm trying to think if that came on those. Or was it an actual fuel injector?
It was an electronic fuel injection.
Okay. So, that's
it
good.
It had its fair share of problems, but it wasn't a nasty mechanical fuel injection system. That would have been a nightmare.
Yeah. That. Yeah, the... Lost my train of thought for a second. I'm sorry. No, it... It's what happens when I try to do two things at once. I like the 944s. I never really got a chance to really be around them very long. I think my history of topping up Porsches has kind of like gotten around now. I really can't imagine a better car to kind of just bring someone into the whole car enthusiast fold. So you had the 944, you know, fun, cheapish, kind of to work on, you know, had problems, but you had to get rid of it. So, you know.
I didn't have to get rid of it. I kind of wanted the money to move on from other things. Move on to other things. Before I got the 944, my idealized vision of this car was that it was going to be somewhat slow but fun to ring out. And that it would handle great and feel great. I was a little surprised, and I didn't say this in the kind of garbage 944 review I did on the channel, because it was like one of the first videos I did, and I didn't know anything. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah.
Getting rid of the 944.
There's an ADD problem here today. My idealized version wasn't exactly what the car was, so it was more like... The engine was slow, or the car was slow. The engine had very little torque below about 3,000, but if you took it over that, yeah, it would have more power, but it also sounded like it was killing itself. That engine sounded awful when you revved it out. It just did not want to rev, even though it wanted to rev. Just kind of messing with my head. And the suspension was incredibly wallowy, but if I wanted to make it more stiff, then the handling would have taken over, because when you're sitting in that car, it has sort of a rear biased weight distribution. Yeah. And I have spun out on the road before. There's only like one person that knows this, and he was with me at the time. I spun out on the road because the back end swung out on a corner. There was nothing I could do because it was penduluming, and it just carried the car with it. And I ended up backwards in the wrong lane. And I found this out when I took it autocrossing one time, too, is that it just really wants to kick that back end out. But if you stiffen up the suspension to get rid of the wallowiness, then it's going to want to do that even more. So the car didn't really meet up to what I wanted to use it for as a car, and it was really only good at cruising, and I just kind of stopped driving it, which is why I wanted to sell it and move on to other things.
Which makes sense. I mean, those cars, again... Not allowed around a lot of them, because I think Steph put the word out. But it's it's one of those things where if the car doesn't do what you want it to do, then it doesn't matter how good of a car it is otherwise. Like, you know, at the end of the day, they're either a tool to get your ass to and from work, or they're just simply something for you to enjoy. And if it's something for you to enjoy, then it's got to do what you want it to do. And otherwise, meh. And again, you got rid of the Porsche, but kept the Tommy car. And that kind of shows, you know, where your mind kind of is when it comes to enjoyment of like, you gotta, you know, if it's not, you know, the Trabant, you obviously can't really kick out the back end of, you know, it just kind of wallows. It kind of just meanders into
its... I wouldn't
say
wallow. It's like riding on a car with no suspension.
Meanders? How's Meander?
Yeah, that's a good one, especially yeah. early on with the right front brake locked up all the time. Meander was a good description.
Yeah.
When I realized that I wasn't thinking about the car anymore, the 944, and I had to make appointments in my mind to go out and drive the car, and it was time to sell it.
Yeah, that is a bad sign. So, that brings me to a good segue for this. So I kind of want to get into this. So we have these inside the actor studio questions for you. And these are kind of, you know, as car guys and, you know, we kind of change our thoughts and opinions on cars daily, hourly, you know, second by second.
I probably so this won't is agree just, with what I said today, tomorrow.
Exactly. So this is just kind of as you sit right now. So the first one is the easiest and the hardest. So what is your favorite car?
Car that I own?
No. It's open to whatever interpretation. What is your favorite car? Could be something you lust after.
Well, you
could
know
be
what?
Something
this
you
is
own.
A really hard question, but it's something just triggered in my mind. I have always wanted a Caterham.
One of the Super 7 things?
Am yes. The right not thing? Quite yeah. the high-end 620R or anything. Maybe like a 480. But I have always wanted a Caterham. I've always wanted that absolutely raw, visceral driving experience.
That makes sense. What is your least favorite car?
Well, this is completely irrational, but I think about it all the time, and every time I see one on the road, I hate Chevy Equinoxes and their brother, the GMC Terrain. I hate them. I don't really know why.
Yeah, I have an irrational hate of CRVs and RAV4s, so I completely understand this hatred of the small crossover. So, plus,
I think the CRV and the RAV4 is the... Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Chevy also has the worst fucking commercials on the planet, too, so...
Whoa, your quality is gone again.
Ah, shit. Well, I was saying, Chevy has the worst commercials on the planet as well, so... That probably breeds into your hate of the Equinox, I would imagine. Can you?
Oh yeah, those real people parody videos on YouTube. Those are the best right now.
Yeah,
they point out everything's wrong with those stupid commercials.
Yeah, I'm still trying to find a way to get those guys into an actual Chevy press conference. I've been trying to work with them, but they're based out of Florida, which boggles my mind. So all the weird stuff happens in Florida. What is your, like, a modification trend you find yourself attracted to? So we're talking about, like, lifted cars, stance cars, bro-dozers, truck nuts. What is there out there that maybe you don't want to do to your car, but you find yourself appreciating when you see it out on the street?
You know, I really like tasteful off-road builds. I don't like any of the stuff you just mentioned, but the really tastefully done, like mildly bigger wheels, some nice meaty mudding tires, a good bumper, sort of what Hoovy's doing to his Lexus now. Tyler Hoover, for anyone that doesn't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. I get that. I think that's very much a, to be honest, the place I have seen that done the most where I'm like, I kind of understand that, has been Southern Illinois and Missouri, so I kind of...
Yeah.
So what is your least favorite modification trend?
Well, this is something I've seen a lot recently, and it's not something that's normal. I've seen a lot of Jurassic Park Ranger vehicles being done. There's one driving around St. Louis. It's a smart car that someone dressed up to be the Jurassic Park Ford Explorer from the movie. And it's just stupid. What's the point?
It doesn't make any sense. That's the point, I guess.
And that one's kind of okay because they put a lot of effort into it. It looks like they really cared about what they're doing. But I've seen another one who he didn't give a crap about anything he was doing, and he wanted a Jurassic Park vehicle. So what he did was he took some plain white vinyl lettering and just wrote the words Jurassic Park Ranger on the back of his Jeep Cherokee. That's just laziness to a new level.
Yeah. Jurassic Park. I just ride it with my truck. Jurassic Park. I drive a Jeep. I'm tactical. Bah. Sorry about that. So, what automotive sound or noise do you love?
Five cylinders.
Oh, easy. We can be friends. Yes.
I love all five cylinders. Except the one maybe in the Colorado. I haven't heard it.
Yeah. It sounds decent. It's not anything to write home about, but it's like, it's still better than a Fuller Banker. We'll give it that.
Not to pander or anything, but I... what?
No, not to pander or anything, but what?
Oh, not to pander or anything, but I rode in a Volvo V70 one time. I drove a Volvo V70, and just an automatic transmission. I stepped on it one time, and it made the engine ring out. It was five-cylinder. I was blown away how good this engine sounded in just a normal family station wagon. It blew me away. So that it just proved to me that all five cylinders have a hidden glory within them.
Mm-hmm. Wait until you hear it in a V70R for the 10 minutes that car actually works before it blows up. So that is just... I love that car, but that car had to go bye-bye. What automotive sound or noise do you hate?
Anything that indicates a problem. Like, anything that's rattling in the Trabant, I don't like, but I can't hear it because of the engine. But in the Wego, there is no engine, so you can hear absolutely everything that's going on, and it makes you worry constantly that something's going to break.
Like, what's wrong with this car?
Such a pile of crap.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you tried to pawn it off on me, like, you like smart cars? Here's a Wego. Like, no.
I try to pawn it off everyone I meet that even shows mild interest.
You need to take it out to you need to road trip it to California and sell it to some granola girl out there. Because she will die over it. Like, oh my god, it's electric! And it's like so easy to park! So
that's actually not a bad idea, but I thought about selling it to the Lane Motor Museum. Because it would fit in with their collection fairly well.
It would. It's weird and it's different. I mean, how many of those things were made? I think you said at one point. Like,
I did say at one point, it turned out to be wrong. I went and visited the factory where they're they're still alive as a business, and the guy there said about 100 of them is how many they made.
Mm. Did you, like, roll up a newspaper while you were there and just whack them all on the nose? Like, no, stop it. Bad Wego. Bad.
I had a lot of conversations with this one guy, and it made me feel bad for ever dismissing the car, but the car is still a pile of crap at the end of the day. It doesn't matter what this one guy thinks.
Yeah. Like, I'm sure someone put a lot of time and a lot of effort and engineering into it and did his absolute best to make that car the absolute best car he could make. But at the end of the day, a turd is a turd.
So, small tangent. That car, as I alluded to in a video, is the base car, the Shuanghuan Noble, the one the Wego, quote-unquote, converted to an electric car. Yeah. It's a Chinese knockoff of the first-gen smart car.
Yeah.
One of my most recent purchases is a first-gen smart car, so I can have the two to compare. I haven't done a video on it yet, but I have both of them right now.
Mm-hmm. See, I like the smart car, but I only like the manual second-generation one with the convertible top.
I totally see why.
Yeah.
The transmission in that thing is tragic. It's so awful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to... It's the only transmission I've ever experienced in a first-gen smart car that's actually worse than that terrible 3-speed overdrive Dodge was putting on their cars for years and years and years.
Yeah, 100%. It's so bad.
So, what car do you dread being stuck behind at a red light?
Anything that causes me to not be able to see the red light anymore, like a semi-truck or something that can roll back at me and not see me.
That is the most practical answer we've ever gotten on that.
Do you want me to say something hilarious? Dodge truck, road dozer, diesel fumes.
No. The practical's fine. This is we get practical answers a lot of times. Like a lot of times when it comes to the noise people hate, we get like, I hate brake wear indicator because that means I have to change the brakes soon. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, practical is practical. Like, we're car guys because we're car guys.
Like what we like.
What? Huh?
Oh, nothing.
All right. So I'm going to give you a choice of two cars here, and you have to daily drive them and live with them for the rest of your life, and you have to keep them modified the way they're modified. So your first one, I'm sure you've already figured out where this is going. The first one is a tastefully off-road prepped Equinox. Your second choice is a Caterham 7, but it has the world's worst Jurassic Park theme. Like, letters are falling off. It's been written by, like, you know, it's totally not there. Everyone's just like, why did you do this to this thing? Like, it's just the worst paint job on the freaking planet. It looks like a six-year-old tried to make it into a Jurassic Park car. So,
well, like I have to say, if you were torturing me and trying to get answers out of me, I would just pretend that I was in pain. Both of those sounded great.
I know. You didn't give me much to work with here. So.
Well, the Equinox I would hate. Are Equinoxes even available in all-wheel drive? I don't know anything about these cars. I just don't like them. Or is it a front-wheel drive off-road thing?
This one's all-wheel drive. We'll just go with, I don't know if they come either, so we'll just go with yes.
So. I forget it. I'm going to take the Caterham. I don't care what it looks like. I'm in the car. Of course, you can see the outside of the car from inside the car, but whatever. I'll just take the Caterham so I can drive it forever.
I think that's the right decision there.
Yeah.
The next question is, and this is, I think, the next two questions I think are the most important questions any automotive show, nay, any show on the planet can really ask anyone.
We'll
get to the bottom of this at some point, and it'll, like, be one of those points they write about in history books of, like, you know, this is the, you know, convergence, like the Renaissance. So the first one is, what is the hardest food to eat while driving?
Well, I've thought about this question, and I don't understand how anyone eats anything while they're driving. I'm completely incapable of it. True story, on the way back home today, I was trying to eat a burrito and I drove off the road. Not true at all. I can't eat anything while driving, so everything is the hardest food to eat.
To answer
your question, I'm going to go with bread bowl soup.
Ooh, the bread bowl adds a new twist to that. No one's brought up the bread bowl. Mm.
Well, yeah, because if it's just soup, you can put in a cup and drink out of it.
Yeah, Matt Hardegree had the number one answer, which was the matzo ball soup. Kind of the same idea because it's got the big matzo ball in it, which makes it so much harder to eat. But the bread bowl adds another layer because there's a time component built into it. So, like, you got to finish it.
Eventually, it's going to soak through that bread and you're left with soup on your lap.
That is, you know, I thought we were going to go down a sad point there, but the bread bowl, brilliant, sir. That is new number one leader in the clubhouse. I am impressed. So,
well,
I'm not impressed by...
I can't eat any food while I'm driving.
Which is, like, I eat all the time while driving. Like, my car is basically, like, probably I eat more in my car than I eat in my house, which is probably a sad indicator of my life, but... Yeah, so, and I drive a manual.
Which I think we have a similar car. Don't you have a red Fiesta ST?
I have an orange Fiesta ST. Yes. Do you have one as well?
Mine's red.
No.
Yeah.
It's nice. Daily. Yep. What year?
2014.
Yeah. Same here. So, it's very close. Do you have a Cobb Stage 1 kit on yours as well?
The only modifications I've done to my car was put a blow-off valve on it just because I'm a child and I wanted a little bit of extra noise when I clutched in.
I have had someone harassing me every day to put a blow-off valve on it. I'm like, I am not six. Like, you got to put a blow-off valve in it. How are people going to know when you're shifting? I don't care.
I am six.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's fun. It makes the fun choo-choo noise, which is absolutely delightful. But yeah, so they're great cars. I honestly think it's the best car on the road right now. So
yeah, I would modify mine. but I'm trying to save my money for the other multitude of projects I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I would... Well, I have to shout out to Cobb, because Cobb sent me the kit, so I could keep telling people how great Cobb is.
Want to send a little... get a little notoriety on Aging Wheels?
All you gotta do is ask. Yeah, ask.
You should send me an email or something.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk off air. So... what was I supposed to say? Lost my train of thought. Oh, what is the hardest makeup to apply while driving?
Well, I know you got experience with this. I'll have to make up an answer.
Hey.
Well, I'm sure the obvious answer here is mascara or eyeshadow or something to do with the eyes, but I want to say lipstick because you risk eating it under bumpy conditions.
That is a decent point. The losing an eyeball or closing an eyeball is a high up on my list there, but
yeah, makeup, I couldn't do that answer. Everyone else does that answer.
Yeah, makeup and the risk of, the airbag shooting it through the back of your throat is kind of lose a couple teeth and lose
I wasn't
esophagus.
Even thinking about the airbag.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. That could end up poorly. So yeah, that's we'll go with not number one answer, but a good place. I'm impressed. Bread Bull, man.
Yeah,
man. Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant on the Bread Bull. I am impressed with that one. So, I guess we should get more into your program here. We've talked a lot about the Trabant. We've talked a lot about your, cars you've had. But for those who are listening who are going like, well, now I need to know more about this guy who's got the best answer so far for what's the hardest food to eat while driving, and I got to learn more about his
that's
Rego.
A good impression.
Listen, I get a lot of stupid answers. I'm just going to be perfectly honest here. Like, well, I think it's Patrick Sandell. I'm sorry. I think a steak's the hardest thing to eat while driving because you got to get a knife and fork. Like, no, you don't. You can just eat that thing like a man. Just rip it with your teeth. Yeah.
Just manhandle that. Pork chops.
Exactly. So, so I'm always looking for the right answer. So, you've been putting out content, for a while. Now, how long has the actual program been up and running?
Since 2014, but I'm the worst about reliability. I haven't put out a new video since like October, and I take long gaps for unknown reasons to the audience. The most recent gap is because I moved again, and I just got a place with a 3,000-square-foot shop, which I'm quite excited about, but it needs all kinds of electrical work and other work done to it, so I have to spend my time on that.
Which a lot of people, a lot of listeners, I guess, a lot of people follow this along. Like, there's programs like Project Binky, which they put out an episode a year, which is more than enough from those guys, and I would say it's definitely worth the subscription to subscribe to you, because when the videos come out, the thing that I'm always in, so I grew up with new media. I'm using the air quotes there. Like, I never was really one to sit around and watch television. I always watched YouTube stuff when that was first coming out, or even Flash back when that was a thing. Like, I've always been online, and I feel like I've gotten a good nose for kind of people who put out good content, and they put out good content consistently when it comes to what they're putting out. And you do a very good job of it. And there's a lot of people who have a lot more subscribers than you who put out shitty content. Not to, I'm not going to name names here, but it's... you're putting out good stuff. It's fun. It's entertaining. It's delightful to watch. You do stupid stuff with cars. And what I really appreciate, too, is when something doesn't work out the way it's supposed to. Like, I'm going to take the Trabant autocrossing, but they won't let me in. So this is why I'm talking about it here instead of showing you that. Or the world's slowest drag racing time, but you only get one go of it. Or, let's just say the Wego in general. It's still fun, and it's still entertaining, and it's still definitely worth a watch. And I think, for those who are listening who are like, well, where should I start? Well, what is your kind of favorite episode to tell people if they want to get into the show, what they should go watch?
Well, My personal favorite are the two destruction reviews I did because of all the planning and fun that went into them. I wanted to structure them like a somewhat normal car review, but slowly destroy the car throughout and then end in a giant explosion. So I always recommend those videos. Whether or not you like them, I really enjoyed putting them together.
And what's weird, so I've been going through the catalog, and I don't know why I watch stuff randomly. It's just the way I fucking work, and I need to get to those videos because I keep seeing them. I'm like, I need to watch those. But here's more about the Trabants. I'm going to go, because I'm obsessed with, I like crappy cars. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. They're more interesting. It's like driving comic relief. It's great.
Yeah. Well, it's also to the point, too, of good cars don't have a soul. Like, a Camry doesn't have character. A Trabant has character. Like, if it was a dog, you would let that dog sleep in your bed. It might wet the bed occasionally, but who cares? It's not the silly little Camry that kind of just sits and just stares at the front door all night. Like, well, he's a good guard dog, but, like, it just doesn't have much personality to him. So, I really enjoyed the show, and I really enjoy what you put out there and what you put together, and I really like, you know, I'm trying to think of, like, you're kind of half, you know, I really can't even put that. You're definitely your own thing you put out there, and I think that's a lot of what endears you to me, is you're not trying to be Top Gear, you're not trying to be anyone else, you're putting out this content. It's very much its own product, and it's well done, it's well produced, and it's well put together. And I think anyone who's listening, who, you know, obviously now we understand you're a car guy, you got the bona fides for that, they need to go check out your program and they need to see and subscribe. So in terms of,
well, thank you. I don't know how to deal with compliments.
Yeah, no, me either. I'm better at giving them out than I am receiving them. So where they want to follow you between the videos, where should they go and check you out? Where are you most active on your social media?
I'm most active on Instagram and Twitter under the same tagline, Aging Wheels.
Mm-hmm. So they should go check you out there because there's good photos and some good smart-ass comments I've seen out there. So, it's just well done, and I'm just kind of, you know, do you have a background in film and composition and any of that? Because it's,
oh god, no.
I'm
a software engineer for a living. I don't I just kind of dabble in the video stuff. If I think of something that can make a video a little bit better, I will, but I don't spend a lot of time worrying about lighting or audio, even though I 100% should spend more time on those things. I just kind of dabble and do what feels right.
Well, whatever it is, it works out well, because there's never been a moment where I'm like, well, I can't really see what he's talking about, blah, blah, blah. And you got a good technical background, too. So that was kind of one of the other things I wanted. You grew up on a farm. We talked about you had the 944. You had the CJ when you were 15. Where does your kind of mechanical background come from?
I don't know. I really like building things. I feel like, this is kind of cliche, but engineering chooses you. You don't choose engineering. I just like building things, and software engineering is part of that. I kind of got into that when I was in high school, just wanting to make apps, as it was, because I was a youth, still am a youth, and that's why I got into computer science. But now it's just I want to build stuff with my hands, because I write code all day, and I want to go home and work with physical objects. Kind of why I built the truck camper. Which, if you haven't seen the truck camper, I would recommend that, too.
Yeah. The first time you build it or the second time you build it? Or the kind of half? Yeah.
The first time I built it was totally because I wanted to build something.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of, again, what makes the program great is you screw up, you admit you screwed up, you show what happened, and you kind of show the mistakes, and, you know, what I like about cars, and I'm sure this is, what I like about working on cars is you can mess up and you can mess up big time, but there's never a point of no return, really. You can always kind of get back to what needs to happen to get this car up and running. So,
yeah. Well, I've experienced the point of no return one time. It's because I bought a car. It was an $800 Saab 96 that I got from a field. And $800 was way too much for this car because it had no floor. But I got out of that one by selling it to a Saab collector in Kentucky and buying another car that was the exact same color, make, year, everything to the one that I sold. So I took the good parts off of the old one and put them on the new one, and that was my recovery. So it was really a point of no return for that one.
What color? So it was, if I remember right from the channel,
it's a blue Saab 96.
Okay, so I was sitting there, got too screwed up in my head because I was just on Craigslist, because that's what I do, looking at random cars, and there was a old Saab, but it was red. So I was like, trying to remember which one's which. I'm like, it probably emigrated further out here, just Saab collector to Saab collector, because this one was in West Virginia. So I'm like, nah. That's too much of a haul for a Saab. So, again, we're kind of coming up on time, and, you know, I've kept you a little long anyway, because we've had some technical issues. So, Robert, again, I want to thank you for being on the show. All the places people can find you, once again, you know, go to YouTube, Aging Wheels, there.
YouTube, Aging Wheels, Twitter, Aging Wheels, Instagram, Aging Wheels. I don't have a Facebook for Aging Wheels yet, and don't add me as a personal friend on Facebook, because I'll reject you. But that's the three places. Don't have a website or anything.
Well, Robert, I'm going to say goodbye to you off air. Everyone who's listening, hold on. I'll be right back after the break. So let's technical. Come on. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show today. I really appreciate it. If you like what you hear, make sure you tell a friend, loved one, or coworker, just so that they can help spread the word and maybe get a little bit of enjoyment in their morning, evening commute, or when they're running on a treadmill. Those things are basically just torture devices. Actually, started off in history as a torture device, ironically enough. So that's a thing. Learning with Ike. So you can follow me in the show on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram at Untitled Car Show. You can subscribe to iTunes, leave a nice review. It really helps out the show. And thanks so much for listening. Have a good night. Have a good evening. Wherever you are, whatever time it is there, thank you so much for listening. Please be safe out there.